She's a hospitalist with SIH. Morning, Dr. Shaw. How are you this morning, ma'am?
Good morning. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Got a little time off. She's been working for very long hours. I'm kind of curious about something just right off the bat, Dr. Shaw. You work at Carbondale Memorial. Is there like a COVID-19 floor or a COVID-19 area for those patients to be sequestered? How's that work?
Yes, we do. We have a particular area that's sectioned off that we have for specific COVID patients, and we have it so that there are other patients on that floor, but the COVID ones are, we not only have their specific room, but we have kind of like an ante room where we gown up, gown off, so that we don't infect anyone else around the floor.
So you've got kind of a safety buffer there of sorts. How many patients have you treated now?
Honestly, I don't know, but definitely a lot.
Yeah. Well, over 30, we figure. See, that's easy to say there. It's because you're part of a team. And it said you're on for a week, off for a week, and then you work very long shifts during that time, and then some decompression time before you go back. And I'm kind of curious, when you have patients, what's the most common symptom you see? And the most common symptoms and the most severe symptoms?
So with COVID, we usually, when they get hospitalized, it's when their symptoms are the worst. But you, for COVID itself, you have symptoms that are, some people, majority of patients, don't have any symptoms whatsoever. And then you see it ranges up all the way to life-threatening respiratory failure, where you can no longer breathe, you have to be hospitalized. Most symptoms arise between 4 to 5 days after you get exposed. And with those mild symptoms that you don't see come into the hospital, they can be just between fever, fatigue, dry cough. Some people can have smell and taste disorders, but then there's those people that start having shortness of breath, and those can rise between 5 to 8 days after these symptoms start. And that's when we see them in the hospital, they'll come to the emergency room, and that's what we want. We want patients, when they're having these symptoms, to come right away, because it's important when we're treating them with our newer treatments to give them at the earliest point of their symptom onset.
But when you have such a wide variety of symptoms, doesn't that make it hard for diagnosis? I mean, you've got the test, but so many people are concerned about false positives. You have a lot of symptoms here.
You do. And that's why we ask, when you know that you've been exposed, to not get tested right away, to get tested at that 5-day mark, because that's when those viral replication gets to its max, to where we can get that positive test.
A more positive test, a more reliable test.
Correct.
All right. You know, a lot of people haven't talked about that, Dr. Shaw. It's interesting that you say that you know, that the viral load has to come to a certain point before you test. And you think, oh, gee whiz, I came into contact and with Bob down the road, and, you know, we shook hands and whatever, right? And you say, so mm-hmm. I come into contact, you go to test. Well, you might have it, but the viral load is not sufficient to be able to trigger the test positive.
Right. And that's why initially, sometimes we tested people twice, and you would see that first negative result and that second positive result because we didn't test them late enough into where they became positive enough or reliable enough for the test itself.
Hey, you mind if I change subjects on you real quick? Let's talk about biology 101. Is that okay?
Sure.
I now remember this vividly. You have no way of knowing this, but I really thought at some point I would be a doctor in my life. I really did. I'd be a doctor. I'm taking Latin and everything else. I'm getting ready. I want to be a doctor when I grow up. Well, that didn't work out. I'm pretty clear here at this point. All right? But I remember this very vividly from Biology 101. Viruses that kill their hosts too fast aren't successful viruses. A virus, over a period of time, is moderated because it wants to be able to on the host long enough to replicate and have children, so to speak. If it kills the host, it kills itself. So over time, viruses kind of moderate, I guess, for a lack of a better word. Is that a fair description of Biology 101?
Yeah, definitely. The virus mutates so that it can live longer and attack as many hosts as possible.
How does that play in this spectrum, you think? Hey, if you apply that one singular piece of knowledge, which is kind of intellectually unfair, but nevertheless, here we are. I mean, do you think that that's what we're seeing in many respects when you see the spectrum of symptoms and the death percentages have dropped, although we have more cases? Are we seeing a virus that is literally mutating before our eyes?
Very well so. Because of how it affects different people, same people in the same household completely differently, I can doubt it. It seems as though it is mutating because we don't know why two people of the same age, one person, completely healthy people, let's say, it'll affect them completely differently.
And see, and this is, I've been thinking about this because when you think about this, and you take two, you know, 70-year-old males, good health, they don't smoke, and they have two dramatically different responses. But they're not twins, but health-wise, they're pretty doggone close as far as human existence goes. And then you see this huge. So, I mean, when you think about this, COVID-19, there's a reason why there's a 19 on the backside of COVID for the year, because you could, and for years, you could buy a COVID vaccine. It's used in veterinary clinics for horses, among other things, right? Seen the bottles. Know they're there. But what we're seeing here is a variety, and then we're seeing a subset of COVID-19. So there might be COVID-19 A, B, C, D, E, F, G, just like there's a hepatitis A and hepatitis B.
Right.
That's got to be a daunting prospect for someone who treats people, knowing the target, your enemy, so to speak, we'll use the military sense, is changing, it's camouflaging, it's mutating while you're trying to deal with it.
It is, and it's because so much so that with COVID itself, some people can be just have mild symptoms, and then within hours to within a day, they can be dramatically different and go into severe respiratory distress. And we, despite all of our efforts, we may not succeed in treating these people.
It's interesting. I talked to one of your patients last night after I was on the phone with you setting up the time for today. Talked to one of your patients last evening. He went back to work yesterday. Very happy about it, too. Yeah. See? So you just got happy all of a sudden. Success stories there. And he was sick. And he was the person I was thinking of when you said how quickly this can progress. So what in your experience has been the best treatment? Or is that treatment answer different depending on symptom, age, and variety, I guess?
It's true. I completely agree with you. We have many ways of treating our patients depending on how severe they come in. If they're just requiring a small amount of oxygen, we start with anti-inflammatory treatments, steroids. We have a lot of data backing up that steroids help when we don't start it early enough, but when they're requiring some amount of oxygen, we start patients on antibiotics. Azithromycin, what you commonly see that we treat, we give a few days if we're thinking that they have pneumonia related to COVID. We initially give them IV fluids because when you have fever, your body gets really dehydrated and we want to give them as much as we can. But throughout their hospitalization, we don't want to give them too much because symptoms then change and we have this aspect of heart failure and their lungs get fluid overloaded. If for some reason one or the other where they start becoming more sick and requiring more amounts of oxygen, we have other medications for viral replication, like the new ones that we've heard, remdesivir and convalescent plasma. Remdesivir, if we give it early enough, I have seen improvement in our patients. There are sometimes when they come in, they're already requiring significant amounts of oxygen or they have to be on the ventilator right away, where these medications won't help because it's been too long into their diagnosis. We treat everyone with blood thinners because COVID has had this increase in, we see patients who have blood clots in everywhere in their body from their head to their toes. So we make sure to treat patients with this prophylactic blood thinner dosing. When patients are intubated, we are on the ventilator. We put them in a particular position. We have some patients in prone positioning where we have them on their bellies to help with their lungs.
All right. Now, you see that, I mean, I do. I see this as a symptom tsunami that you want to get in front of, repress the symptoms that are coming on to the patient and get ahead of that because of the severity that's behind them and the damage behind the tsunami. When you look at this as a comparative analysis with flu, this more profound cardiovascular component, I think, is really what you've been talking about that doesn't really exist in flu. Now, there is a cardiovascular component to flu, increased heart rate and blood pressure and things along that line. We've seen that in the past. But this cardiovascular component is kind of important because, and here's why I think it's important, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Shaw. I spoke with other doctors about this, and you, what made me think of it was when you talk about laying people over on their chest. All right, now when... If you're a parent and you've had kids with flu or yourself, right, mucus, phlegm, your lung is full of fluid. But with this cardiovascular component with COVID-19, the chest is full of flesh, of the membranes, of the alveoli as they expand. It's not mucus so much as the tissue itself is swelling. Is that incorrect?
No, that sounds very correct.
Okay. And I think that's an interesting distinction. People say, well, we have all these things to be able to mucus and fluid and get the lungs clear, right? We can do this. But that's not what COVID-19 does to the lungs.
No, and that's why it is so hard when we're treating them, because it can happen so suddenly, as opposed to some people, it's gradual. So we try, like I said, try to keep them as dry. We'll give them medications for them to pee out as much fluids as we can.
Right, and get that get the fluid out of the body, as we do it for other cardiovascular issues, like an enlarged heart.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Shaw, it's been a real pleasure visiting with you. Dr. Sonal Shaw is a hospitalist with SIH. She's been treating a lot of patients in the COVID quarantine area of the Carbondale Memorial Hospital. My experience that no matter what your political views, when you get sick, that politics goes right out the door pretty darn quick because so much of this has been politicized. But, I mean, when you talk, you're frontline troop here on this. I mean, I'm not going to say you have a magic wand, but if you got something that you could just pick out of a pool of things that you think would help people or a great piece of advice, what would it be?
My advice would be for people to stay at home when they can, not to go out, not to be in large groups. If you must go out, when you have to go to the grocery store, when we have to fill up gas, anything like that, wear a mask. That's all we can ask. But we don't know when this is going to end. It does not seem as though it's going to end anytime soon. The one thing that we can do for each other to get it more under control is for everyone to wear a mask.
Do you see anything in the tunnel that's a light at the end of the tunnel that's good right now today? From your perspective, what do you see that's good in the fight against COVID-19? Anything?
Everyone working together.
Yeah? That's your takeaway? Yeah. That you've seen people push and pull the wagon all in the same direction?
Yes.
So, Dr. Sonal Shaw, it's been a real pleasure. How long have you been doing this, Dr. Shaw?
I've been an attending for the last 3 years with SIH.
So it's a good time you had a little experience there before. You kind of would like to go back to normal, wouldn't you?
I would love to go back to normal, but right. I don't see normal happening anytime soon. This is our new normal, and this is what people should expect. And that's why they should do everything as much as possible to help each other. Wash your hands, wear a mask, don't touch your face.